Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. And to all the veterans listening today, happy Veterans Day. Thank you for your service. And for our Veterans Day conversation, we will focus not on the Iraq and Afghanistan vets, who we talk about so often on this show, but today more on the Vietnam-era veterans. With Kurt Anderson, host of WNYC's Studio 360, they did a recent American Icons piece on the Vietnam War Memorial, the Wall, in Washington, D.C. Here's the first 30 seconds of that piece.
This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson, and right now I am looking at panel 22 west of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial here in Washington. And a little more than halfway down is the name Frederick D. Blackwell. His widow, Asenath Blackwell, comes here twice a year on Memorial Day and Veterans Day to look at her late husband's name on this panel.
In my mind, my husband is still 24, still looks 24, but I'm 71.
With me now is Kurt Anderson, host of Studio 360, and we would love to hear from Vietnam-era veterans on your relationship to the Wall, which is, of course, a memorial to those of your colleagues who did not come home, with some 58,000 names etched right in. Vietnam-era veterans, call us up today on this Veterans Day, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. It was so controversial when it was first proposed. Do you feel that America will forever, long past the time that you're alive, that we're all alive, that America will remember Vietnam in the right way, and Vietnam-era vets in the right way because of the Wall? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And good morning, Kurt.
Good morning, Brian.
How did you approach an American Icons piece about the Vietnam War Memorial? There was so much you could say about it. Did you have a major question even this many years out, or a major theme going in?
Well, although it seems relatively recent to people our age, and I remember writing about it at the time for Time magazine where I worked. But on the other hand, it seems like a long time ago in the sense that my children certainly have no memory of the incredible, contentious, divisive feelings about that war. And it was 1980, 81, 82 when it was dedicated, only seven years after the war had ended, and emotions were still very raw. So we didn't have a, you know, this is our idea, we'll go. We just went and talked to lots and lots of people, veterans, to Maya Lin, who designed it, to the extraordinary veteran Jan Scruggs, whose idea this was, and got it through to, as it happened, we talked to Chuck Hagel, now the Secretary of Defense, who at that time was an administrator at the Veterans Administration, who and also a Vietnam veteran who helped it get done. It's extraordinary that it got done, that it was so beautifully executed. It was so resisted by the sort of established and rank and file veterans groups of the time, and yet as soon as it opened, as soon as they saw it, as soon as they came face to face with it, their kind of reflexive opposition to what they thought was going to be some anti-war hippie thing melted into, for the overwhelming part, love.
And let's talk about that evolution of the way Vietnam vets themselves and people who felt a strong connection to that era, regardless of their politics, reacted to the Wall at first. Many people who had a connection resisted going to the memorial at first. Here's a clip from your piece of Laverne Neely, who lost her son in the war.
I never made an effort to come to the Wall, Vietnam Wall. I just didn't think, well, it couldn't bring my son back. I came to the Wall for the first time in 87. And when I looked at that wall, it just seemed like Dan was looking at me. And I could hear him. The wall has meant a lot to me. It has it has done a lot of healing.
Kurt, you want to talk about that?
Well, that is a very common emotion that we found as we talked to people like that, survivors, wives, mothers, brothers, husbands of people who had died in Vietnam, who were resistant, who thought, oh, I don't need to, even if they didn't have any kind of political opposition, just I don't need this. And then the catharsis that literally that memorial prompted sort of changed their feelings. It is and it remains. I mean, not just for people who had loved ones who or comrades who died there, but for other people, for Americans in general, for foreign visitors who come there in droves. It speaks of the loss of the sacrifice in this extraordinary way that almost, you know, no other memorial I know about or we know about does.
Eddie in Lincoln Park, you're on WNYC. Eddie, thank you for calling.
Yes.
Vietnam vet?
Yes. 67 to 68.
And what are you thinking as you hear the conversation about the wall?
Well, I have to comment on is it Kurt?
Yes, Kurt Anderson, host of Studio 360.
I really have a difficult time with the anti-war hippie. When I came back from Vietnam, I didn't know anything going in about Vietnam. It was an adventure. I got drafted 3 months after I graduated high school. I had no idea what to do, and it was like a godsend to get drafted, believe it or not. But no one knew about Vietnam. You were sent there. You believed the government. And when I came back, or my experience there, enlightened me to the barbarism of war and what it turns you into. And it wasn't pretty. And it was done through the idea of democracy. And it had nothing to do with that. And, you know, the Vietnam anti-protesters, the hippies. When I came back, I went to two or three anti-war demonstrations. So I think we have
I think that what Kurt was doing was articulating the criticism of some vets who didn't like the design of the wall because they thought it was going to be a reflection of what they considered anti-war hippie sentiment. Kurt,
right.
Is that what trying to say?
That was precisely it. And that there was, as you recall, this kind of knee-jerk opposition on the part of all kinds of people, including some veterans, who thought, it was called by one of the veteran opponents famously a black gash of shame. There was this sense that this was not a celebration of the service, but a kind of right. Slap in the face.
And obviously, Eddie, there were many people like yourself and John Kerry and many others who, because of what they saw in Vietnam, turned against the war when they came back. Have you gone to visit the memorial, Eddie?
Yeah, I was telling the young lady who took my name that I had gone to Washington D.C. once or twice when I came back, but I could never drag myself to the wall when it was finished. And I think at the third time I went, I finally forced myself to go to it, and I like it. Because it's right in your face, all the young men who died, all the names. It's not a statue. You know, you see all those names, and it's just an incredible feeling, sadness, of course, and just it just shows how barbaric war is.
So it's, for you, both a fitting tribute to the individuals who served
right.
and died and an anti-war statement.
Right. It's a very individual memorial, because you see the names there, you know, and they're just right in your face, and you there are people, and then it's also a message of, you know, these were human beings, these were brothers, sisters, wives, fathers who lives, you know, changed completely.
Eddie, thanks so much for calling in, and thanks for your service.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Kurt Anderson.
Well, one of the brilliant strokes of the design about the names, in addition to having every name there, and that was part of the brief, Maya Lin's idea was to arrange them chronologically rather than alphabetically, so that veterans can go there and find the names of the people who died on a given day, and often together, which again makes them into real people who died on a day in 1968 or 1970, rather than some kind of abstracted alphabetical catalog. The other thing that I think, when he says you come face to face with those names, that's exactly right, and you are beneath ground level. This wall is towering over you, and because it's reflective black granite, you see yourself in those names, which I also think has a powerful effect.
We're talking about the Vietnam War Memorial on this Veterans Day and taking calls from Vietnam-era vets, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Kurt Anderson, the host of WNYC Studio 360, along with us because of this Great American Icons piece that they did recently about the wall. And you talk in the piece a lot about the objects that people leave. And you even discovered that all the things left at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial have their own museum. So let's hear a clip of you going through this museum with journalist Laura Palmer.
Touching the objects is a little like a sensory time machine. There was a heavy green poncho with a peace symbol painted on the back. There was a 1960s pack of cigarettes.
I used to smoke Camels, yeah, unfiltered. What? Lucky Strike.
This is a Lucky Strike pack. No, this already looks so antique.
Yeah, and it does.
It's a mint condition pack of Lucky Strikes.
Now, Kurt, I didn't know about this. Is this an actual thing, a museum that sprung up to house the artifacts that people left at the memorial?
I didn't know either. It's extraordinary. Yes. This started spontaneously, sort of as soon as the memorial was dedicated 30 years ago, people just leaving things, sometimes specific mementos of a loved one's life who had died, you know, books, every possible kind of memento that people left that began gathering by the hundreds and thousands. None of them have been thrown away. They never were swept away and tossed into the garbage. They have been collected, and after a certain point, the government decided, well, we got to keep all this stuff. This is a kind of museum that has spontaneously had its objects given to it by Americans and visitors of all kinds, and now it is cataloged and kept in this large warehouse just outside Washington, D.C., and there's never been anything like it. And now, of course, people leave. This has become a thing that people do at other memorials. Again, another way in which this memorial sort of changed the nature of memorials.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. We'll continue this conversation with Kurt Anderson and some of you Vietnam-era veterans who are calling in. I'm also going to read an email that I got from one Vietnam-era vet and why he didn't go to the wall at all to this day and wrote in about it. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Kurt Anderson from Studio 360 on this Veterans Day. You can listen to their full episode about the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. in the American Icon series of Studio 360. You can hear it on our website anytime at WNYC.org. Kurt, here's part of an email that I got from a veteran from the Vietnam era, who writes, quote, a fellow veteran got me to give some money to Jan Scruggs when he was launching the campaign to get the wall built. I think it's a great thing, but I have not been able to bring myself to visit it. The Army sent me to Europe at the height of the Vietnam War, and I had a nice 2.5-year vacation in Germany while others were fighting and dying. Any one of the 58,000 names on that wall could have been mine. Thanks for remembering. So some survivor's guilt, maybe you'd call it keeping that away from the wall.
That's really interesting to me, given that it's an entirely different reason for resisting going that lots of Vietnam veterans talk to us about, and the earlier caller talked as well. That's fascinating.
Glenn and Inwood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Glenn. You didn't go either?
No, Brian, I didn't. Not so much a matter of didn't as couldn't. I was down at Washington and a Union rally about 15 years ago. And can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm listening.
And turns out we had some time on our hands, and I figured, you know, what the hell, let me go down to the wall. And I thought I'd put a lot of things behind me, but it became apparent as I closed in on the wall that all these ghosts started welling back. And to tell you the truth, they just, you know, they beat the heck out of me, and I couldn't do it. Everything that I had thought that I had dealt with, apparently I had not, and I just felt I saw the guys I'd served with and, you know, my brothers, actually, and I felt, Jesus Christ, I don't want to let myself in for this, you know?
It's totally understandable. How do you deal with Veterans Day in general? Is there something you do, or do you have to chase ghosts on this day every year, too?
Well, I call an old buddy of mine upstate who soldiered with me, and usually we go down and we march. We carry a placard with the face of a guy, Bernie Lynch, who came from the neighborhood and was killed in action in the last week of his tour. But most guys that I know, Brian, it seems to me like, the thing you got to remember, a lot of your listeners might not know, that Vietnam was not like World War II. We weren't welcomed with open arms. We didn't have Hollywood and the media behind us. We were kind of vilified. And the VA wasn't too cooperative either. And it seems like basically we survived by drawing strength among ourselves, you know what I'm saying? And just toughing it out. And it seems to me down through the years that that's been forgotten. But most of the vets I spoke with have had the same experience as me, and for somehow I just couldn't muster up what it is. I don't know if it's the courage or what to go to that wall.
Glenn, do you think the VA and the country in general have learned things from your post-war experience and those of your buddies for the people now coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan and how they get treated in general?
Well, I'm not an expert in that. From what I've seen, the brief touches I've had with the VAs know that they have not. It still seems to be more or less a bureaucratic organization. And even more so, I remember going once or twice in the aftermath of Vietnam, but it seems to me, if anything, that the VA has gotten worse. It seems to me that most of the veterans today get shunted around from pillar to post. And you know, and frankly, it doesn't seem to me the VA cares a whole lot. And I've had brothers who had experience with the VA, and they more or less mirror that. And it seems to me that one or two psychiatrists that really deal with the guys in a meaningful way are kind of ostracized by the bureaucracy running the VA. So, no, I must tell you, Brian, I do not.
Glenn, thank you for your call. And we do know that, Kurt, on this Veterans Day, there are some horrific numbers being tossed around about the conditions for returning Iraq and Afghanistan vets. 28% report some kind of disability. There's a percentage that I've seen of like 30% getting food from food pantries and soup kitchens. The unemployment rate is points higher than the general population.
No, and as Glenn talked about, when the VA doesn't do its job properly for whatever variety of reasons, it's inexcusable. He's absolutely right to mention the either vilification or ignoring of Vietnam veterans right after the war. That was a true thing that existed, and I do think the government, federal bureaucracy aside, the culture and society are most certainly treating veterans of Afghanistan and Iraq very, very differently than Vietnam veterans were treated, and whatever one's position about these recent wars were. What happened in the 1970s and 80s is not happening now in that sense.
By the way, I should remind everybody, and I now know the specifics, the American Icon special on the Vietnam Memorial will air 2 o'clock this afternoon on WNYC FM and AM, also on New Jersey Public Radio. So 2 o'clock this afternoon, you can hear the whole thing. Bernie in Mount Kisco, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bernie.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
Well, in terms of my experience in Vietnam, I was a first lieutenant there in an armor platoon, and got a Purple Heart and got a Bronze Star with a V device, and but was very fortunate to come out in one piece. And when I got home, I got off the plane in San Francisco, and I was some guy walked up to me and hocked a big Louie at me, and I just felt. I didn't even want to confront him. I just wanted to catch my plane to get back home. And so I just raced on past him. I didn't suffer any real major ill effects. I kind of had hives for a couple of weeks, I think, but nothing major. And then eventually I went down to the, a couple of years later, went down to the, memorial in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Washington.
Yeah, in Washington, I mean. And I think that was the first time I felt very emotional because I hadn't been treated that well when I got home. I had moved from Indiana to New York then and tried looking for a job, and everybody just looked at you like you were nuts, you know, because you were, you know, you just had wasted all this time. And, you know, even though I maybe had 50 people that worked for me and got everybody home safe and, you know, I had a lot of responsibilities. It just wasn't appreciated at that time.
And you felt that the wall was the nation standing up to embrace you and your colleagues and your experiences?
It was the first time anybody had really said thank you in the way I looked at it. And, I mean, there were no parades. There was no – and your family, although they were very supportive, they were afraid to talk about it to you, you know. So there was no real – way to share the way you were feeling, and I felt very fortunate. I didn't have the problems a lot of people did have after the war, but I think the wall was the first time that it kind of came out. I got very emotional, surprisingly. I just came out of nowhere, and I was just it was the first time that I could kind of let loose a little bit about it, I think.
And Bernie, thank you so much for calling us, and again, thank you so belatedly for your service. A lot of vets had that experience with the wall.
Well, absolutely, which we found in the hour we produced about it, and what he said too about the family not even being nervous about talking about it, all of these factors, empathy, more negative emotions that led to a kind of let's just forget about this, let's just deny this, and when this the mall for the first time is taken up by this giant memorial. It was the national announcement that okay, we are copping to the fact of this extraordinary war and its 58,000 dead.
You know, this Veterans Day, and you were talking about how people ignored it. Gives me a memory that I haven't had in a long time. Covering a Veterans Day parade here in New York City. In the 80s, the first one I had seen, I was struck at the time by how they seemed to only be World War II vets and Korean War vets who were there. Vietnam vets were not marching.
Right. No, I mean, which is a great measure of how long it took for a kind of coming to terms with this. And Lord knows, in many ways, in terms of the political discourse today, we're still coming to terms with this.
So let's wrap this up with one more clip from the American Icon special on the Vietnam Memorial, which will re-air in full at 2 o'clock this afternoon on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. This is about a traveling version of the memorial, which, by the way, is in New York right now at the Intrepid through November 20th. And this clip is of Sharon DeNitto, who talks about her relationship to this traveling version of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial.
I always say in the morning, as the sun's coming up, you see the steam coming off of the memorial, And it's like the spirits are rising. And I always say when I work at the memorial, okay, guys, company's coming. It's time to get up. And as you see the steam going up, it really is like they're getting up. And at night when the sun goes down, I tell the guys, okay, you can rest now, but get some rest because they'll come back again tomorrow. It was my generation. And somebody's got to take care of them.
You can listen to the full episode of Studio 360's American Icon Story on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial at WNYC.org anytime or on the radio this afternoon at 2. Kurt, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Brian.